VIP line, the co-host of Purely Broncos, mornings at 7 on Orange and Blue 760. Andy Lindahl joins us. Andy, great to have you. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm just impressed. You know the show name that I'm on, and I don't.
Well, I mean, we don't know the name of our show, but we know the name of yours. Let's start with this. Mace and I were discussing the Jamaal Charles situation, and I just firmly believe that as long as he shows he's healthy on Saturday, he is a slam dunk to make this roster. Saturday night has nothing to do with his proving he can, you know, he deserves a roster spot. It's just all about showing that he's healthy enough to be on this team. But from an ability standpoint, he's a lock. How do you see it?
Well, I would say from the ability standpoint, yes. I do think next week is an important week that he shows that there's no swelling, no after effects, nothing that's going to suggest the knee can't hold up. And I think he does start the year on the roster. But I don't know. I mean, Andrew and I have talked a lot about it on the podcast. For my money, I want Stephen Ridley around. Now, Tyler Palumbus seems to think that Stephen Ridley is a bubble player. We don't agree on that. But for me, I'm keeping Stephen Ridley for at least a couple of weeks. I heard your discussion about the pup list. I would use that to my advantage with a Devontae Booker because he's going to have to get back into shape anyway. The kid, I assume, has been doing total football drills for a while. And even though he may have to spend a couple of weeks where he's not fully ready, I'd want to make sure what I was letting go in a healthy Stephen Ridley before I cost him his job to kind of take, you know, roll the dice that when regular contact and regular football activities start happening, that Jamaal Charles' knee is not going to do something I didn't expect.
Yeah, it's funny. With Ridley, I actually brought up the vested veteran rule on the contract. So I wonder if that may come into play as well with the decision they make on him at the 53.
Well, I mean, and he's a cheap option though. I can't imagine he got a great contract. The guy told us point blank, he was just hoping the phone would ring again. So, you know, I don't know how this will work out. I just feel like with Slaughter and Ridley, if those are two of the cuts on cut down day, I'm not sure you get those guys back if you decide you want them.
So you think Slaughter may have shown enough to where he might be hard to sneak through now?
Well, I think this is a quarterback-starved league. Now, look, for all I know, there's Kyle Slaughter's probably on every team. We all fall in love with players during the preseason that, if we were to look at it during a regular season situation, aren't really up to NFL standards. But that's the illusion and why maybe we like preseason. I mean, let's be honest about it. We'll start arguing guys that could or could not get cut next week, and if they start playing, we're probably in trouble, right? The third, the fourth running back. If Stephen Ridley has to be the starter due to injury to D'Angelo Henderson and C.J. Anderson, I don't know what things are going to look like. Now, I think he's a pretty good option, but you're far down your depth chart at that point. So I don't want to make too much of it, especially with Kyle Slaughter. But, I mean, look, this is a kid that's shown pretty good arm strength, and frankly has shown a willingness to make NFL passes. And so maybe he gets back to the practice squad, but if some team really needs a quarterback and they're not very good and they're willing to keep three on a roster, Slaughter could be their answer.
I certainly think it'll be interesting to see how much time he gets in the preseason finale, because if they don't want to expose him, do you maybe not give him as many reps as you were planning to? Maybe does the preseason finale now belong mostly to Paxton Lynch at that point, and maybe you're only giving Kyle Slaughter a cameo because you don't want to expose him and get more film out there for teams to take a look at?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, Andrew, but you tell me. You've seen this dance. He's shown plenty in my mind. He's shown that, you know, he's not going to be anybody's starter. I'm not even suggesting he's going to be anybody's backup. But look at Cleveland. Cleveland's got five quarterbacks. I mean, basically last night, John Gruden said, you need to cut a few of these guys. You got too many guys taking reps, and they're not all worthy of reps. So I don't necessarily disagree with him, and I'm not saying a bunch of teams want to muddy the water like Cleveland has got it going on. But there's a lot of teams in this league that aren't worried about Super Bowl or bust this year that are looking for a quarterback that I think may be a little bit more amenable to signing a Kyle Slaughter after what he's shown. Now, maybe not. You know, it is just against a bunch of guys that likely won't be in the NFL, but I just think the kid has shown I think he's shown a courage to make passes that Well, honestly, he's shown courage to make passes that not a lot of other quarterbacks I've seen in preseason be willing to make. Throw on time. He made some better reads than what I watched in that Monday night fourth quarter last night. Geno Smith has been in the league 3 years and is still throwing at a guy that's got a corner right next to him or a linebacker or whoever it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some brutal quarterback play out there, so I think Kyle would get some interest.
303-713-7600. Andy Lindahl with us, co-host of Purely Broncos Mornings at 7. He and Tyler Plumbus do a great job here on Orange and Blue 760. Let me just throw out one contrary point. Part of it's devil's advocate, and part of me really believes this. A lot of teams have their Kyle Sloter, Andy, guys who have been in their system already. There's no acclimation process, and they you know, he's either an undrafted guy or a seventh-round pick kind of guy that wasn't maybe expected to do much anyway, at least his rookie year. I don't know. I think there's a – we saw this with Zach Dysart a couple of years ago where he was really impressive in the preseason, and there was a lot of talk about, well, he's not going to get through waivers if they cut him, and he got through waivers.
Oh, look, I made that exact analogy. So I don't disagree with you, and I'm not saying it's slam dunk Sloter doesn't return.
Sure.
But, well, you know what, guys, if we're going to be honest for a minute, don't you kind of wonder, I mean, I don't know, maybe what CJ said yesterday is no big deal. CJ, VJ, Vance Joseph, maybe what he said at the presser yesterday is no big deal. Maybe Kyle Sloter isn't worried about it. You know, I said to Tyler this morning, Kyle Sloter basically went from the intern, because that's what he was, is basically a camp arm. We were all told this guy's a camp arm who was just getting a look in the NFL. And in the real business world, Sloter went from being the intern getting coffee and stuff. Now they're thinking about giving him a job because practice squad is still a job. I don't care what team you're on. You're going to make a nice living being a practice squad player. So he's already done a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, it was a little raw for me yesterday. You know, now that's life in the NFL, and that's Vance Joseph, and I think that's why his players love him. But, you know, I mean, look, we don't know. Maybe Kyle decides that, you know, they've got two guys and they're both young. If he's let go and the Broncos want him back, who's to say he doesn't look for a place that has an older guy that maybe he could try to, you know, get in the mix a little bit better than he's got with two younger guys here?
Perhaps, but at the same time, he's also in a system where he's already proven he can do something. I mean, that is the other thing that comes into play. And and this is another thing that I was thinking about with the quarterbacks here and with Trevor Siemian. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this season goes for the team and for Trevor Siemian, because what does he have to do to be the unquestioned starter at this point in 2018? Like, what benchmarks, what level of team success does he have to hit to where in 2018 they're saying, it's your job?
I think he makes the playoffs. Look, I think he's got a chance to buy himself the incumbent starter role. Now, I do hope this has not been a lot of fun this year, but it's not been a lot of fun because for the first 2 weeks of camp, I don't know that either guy was really getting you to jump up and down. I mean, the reason why I'm excited for Trevor Siemian right now is what I saw Saturday night was the stand-up, this isn't a competition, I'm slamming the door, we're done with this kind of performance. I think we all wanted maybe the first week of camp, if that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
He finally did it. He slammed the door. He left no question. He made the team look completely different than it did with Paxton Lynch. Now, I think he was doing some of that in the Chicago game. It maybe wasn't so obvious. There was just a bigger – I think it was easier to see the stark contrast the other night against San Fran. But I think if he gets you to the playoffs, and I think if the team believes in him, and look, no matter how you want to put it, Trevor Siemian 2 years in a row – has won a job that, frankly, I'm not sure the team thought he would take last year, and I'm not sure they fully wanted him to take this year. I mean, look, we're learning about the politics of the NFL. They were on display this camp. The first-round pick was desired by the franchise to show enough to win the job. Now, I give this franchise a lot of credit because they could have said, tough, we're going with the first-rounder, we drafted him for a reason. They didn't do that. They acknowledged the right play, and I know – the fans out there, it may not seem like a big deal, but why do you think the Cleveland Browns sometimes are what they are? Tim Couch got forced into a situation when he wasn't ready to play. We could go through all the franchises that threw guys out there when they shouldn't have. The Cincinnati Bengals have had their fair share of doing that. So I give the franchise credit for letting it truly be an open competition, but you got to give Trevor Siemian a ton of credit for being mentally strong enough to know that probably deep up in the front offices there, they would hope that the first round pick would prove they could win, that he could win the job. And Trevor remained unfazed by it, completely unfazed. And 2 years in a row, he's come and taken a job that I don't think they thought would be his. And I think that says a lot about his mental fortitude. So if the team rallies around him and he gets in the playoffs, I would assume that's enough to at least let him be the incumbent starter next year, which he wasn't this year.
Yeah, and there's a notion that I think some have that Trevor is under no pressure because he's a seventh-round pick. And I think that's a load of garbage because if you're a seventh-round pick, you don't get a lot of latitude.
Mm-mm.
They will cut you in a heartbeat. You don't get second, third, fourth chances if you're a seventh round pick in this league. You have a bad first camp and you're gone and you're forgotten with the garbage the next day. You are under tremendous pressure, and he's handled it with a lot of grace and a lot of poise. And that's, you know, you said, and you actually said, hey, I think he has to make the playoffs to solidify that role. I would actually go a step further. I think it's not just playoffs. I think he has to perform reasonably well in the playoffs. If he gets the playoffs and has a Brian Hoyer-like game, I don't think that it's necessary. I don't think he's going to be handed the job. But I have seen enough poise from him in the pressure of back-to-back competitions, in the pressure of being a seventh-round pick who, in the NFL, a seventh-round pick is easily disposable, that I think if he's in a playoff situation, he will be able to handle it very well.
Gentlemen, let me throw this at you, though. You know what I feel like? And I feel like Vance Joseph, as I said, I was a little taken back by how raw he was about the quarterback situation. I think we're just surprised. Coaches don't seemingly show their hand like that in the NFL, and he did. No big deal. But I also think one of the great things Vance did yesterday, and I hope Trevor feels a little bit different than it did a year ago, so we can really try to see what this kid's potential can be, because we've all talked about you can't say that the ceiling's been hit for him. It hasn't. But when Vance Joseph said, this is done, this is over, it's Trevor's job, unless there's an injury, we're not looking to replace him, that to me is a message of, I felt like last year the message to him was, don't screw it up. Don't make a turnover. Don't cost us the game because you did something stupid. Let the defense win it like they did in 2015. To me, what Vance Joseph said when he said, this is it, we're done, Trevor's the starter, and we're not making a switch unless there's an injury. Now, we all know the NFL, permanent in the NFL is about 3 or 4 games, and then they'll re-decide it there. Maybe it's not even that. So I'm not saying that they'll stick to their guns all year if the play doesn't look good. But right now, Trevor Siemian has been given the green light to go out there and just play ball and make decisions and take some chances if you need to, because this is your job. Let's go see what he does with it, because I feel like last year he was constantly worried about poor play or a stupid interception costing him his job. And I hope we see a different, more freer Trevor out there.
You know what I'd like to see underscore that? I'd like to see him be a team captain.
Yeah.
Because he was a captain at the end of last year.
Interesting. Andy, you're awesome. We appreciate the time and the insight. Thank you.
Thank you, fellas.
That's Andy Lindahl, co-host of Plumbus and Lindahl, Purely Broncos, mornings at 7 on Orange and Blue 760. We're going to continue to break down Siemian, the quarterback, Slaughter, as Mason and I continue.
Rookie cornerback and kick returner, Brendan Langley. And Brendan, I want to start by asking you, on that first kickoff return of the game, were you maybe a little overly enthusiastic? Because I got to think when Brock Oliva and your coaches went over it with you, they were like, well, if it's 8 yards deep, maybe you just take a knee. I know you want to make a play. Or did they say, hey, it's a preseason, just go out and make a play?
Yeah, nah, I probably should have taken a knee. But at the end of the day, I don't regret my decision at all. You know, it's just about making plays. So if you think you can make it, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where if you make it, you're a hero. If you don't, you know, everybody's looking at you sideways. But, hey, I never seen anyone be successful by not taking risks.
Hey, Brandon, this is Steve Atwood. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Steve?
Good, good. Now, hey, I wanted to ask you this question earlier and didn't get a chance to ask you. I wanted to ask you, who do you pattern your game after, if anyone?
I don't really have any person in particular. I kind of try to take a piece out of, you know, some of my favorite players, you know, two of my teammates and Chris and Talib. And, you know, I also watch Patrick Peterson a lot. I watch Sherman a lot. I watch Marcus Peters a lot. I watch Brent Grimes, you know, pretty much all technicians. You know, I feel like I have all the athletic talent. Now I just got to get the technique and put it all together.
Okay.
Go another one, Steve.
Go ahead.
Okay, so Broncos rookie Brendan Langley joining us. And when you were drafted, there was plenty of talk about your athleticism. You come to the Broncos in the third round out of Lamar. The question was how quickly you could develop your technique as a corner. Based on how things went in the spring and summer and now into training camp, where do you think you are with that, and what are your coaches telling you about how your development's coming?
Oh, I didn't even know that was a topic of discussion.
It was. Sorry.
But I think I'm coming along well. I think the significance in where I landed is I don't necessarily have to be thrown into the fire. I don't have to, I'm catching on quick, but I don't have to just catch on the next day, type of deal. I don't have to be thrown out there. I'm behind two all pros. So, just kind of learning from them, honing in on some things, and, my time will come.
Right. Now, Brandon, how do you feel about your camp performance thus far? I know you're a rookie in the league and everything. I know you probably go back after practice and reevaluate. Man, I had a good practice. I wish I'd have done some things differently. How would you rate your overall camp so far?
Right. I don't think I've had the camp I wanted to have. I wouldn't say that's necessarily expected, but at the same time, I guess you can only expect so much out of yourself. This is my first, obviously rookie, my first time in NFL camp and things like that. So I'm just still kind of catching on to some things, learning new things. Actually, just learned something new today, I'm just learning every day, just trying to take everything in, just be a sponge, for as much as I can. And like I said, when it's my time, it'll be my time.
Awesome. Broncos rookie corner Brendan Langley, our guest here for another minute or two, just as he's coming off the practice field. You finally get to play a home game. I know you've probably enjoyed your first two games on the road. I mean, in
Definitely.
Historic Soldier Field, and of course getting to play a historic franchise and practice with the Niners. But how fired up are you for Saturday night and the Green Bay Packers coming to town, and you get to play your first home NFL? I get it's preseason, but it's still pretty darn cool, right?
Yeah, I'm super excited, man. Like, all I hear around here is, how great the fan base is, and even seeing it for myself at those first few open practices. I actually pass by the stadium every now and then, just driving around, and it just looks amazing from the outside. I can't wait to get in and make some plays.
That's right. You guys haven't done a walk through anything down there yet, huh?
Nothing.
Okay, all right. Yeah, that's going to be nice. One other question, Brandon. Now, what players on our Broncos team have impressed you, either whether it's, the way they practice or the way they played? And, after you're getting a chance to spend a month or so, well, several months with them.
Yeah, everybody, to be honest. Everybody in the organization, really, all the way from the top down. You see how Mr. Elway operates. You see how Coach Joseph operates. You see how the coordinators, Coach Woods, operates. And then it's like a trickle down effect. So really, I've been impressed by the entire staff, and I don't think anyone does it better. I mean, I've never been to another team, but from what I see, you can tell why they win the AFC West and the AFC and things like that. Like year in and year out, like it's not by mistake.
All right, I just have one or two quick ones for you. And again, it's Brendan Langley joining us from UC Health Training Center. So with the news that Trevor Siemian was going to be the starting quarterback, Vance Joseph said that he told the team yesterday, you guys, wasn't much reaction. Everyone, I'm sure, reacted in their own way, and then you moved on, business as usual. But can you get the sense now, this is probably going to be the last quarterback question anybody, or the final day people ask quarterback questions, but that because the decision was made now, the team can really, I don't want to say move on, but just really start to focus on the regular season, knowing who the starting quarterback is. Was there that sense at practice today?
I couldn't really tell you, to be honest. I don't really pay too much attention on what goes on offense, to be quite frank. I'm more honed in on defense, but it didn't really seem any different to me. Everyone was still on their P's and Q's. Still up tempo, things like that. Nobody was really down on themselves or anything that I could tell.
All right, final thing I have for you, because I talked to you right when you came in after being drafted. I think we were the first folks to talk to you there at the UC Health Training Center draft weekend. You told us what a voracious reader you are, and I know training camp, it's mostly the playbook, but when you haven't been in your playbook, what are you reading right now?
Still reading 48 Laws of Power. Still reading Contagious, just read those over and over again. I have a daily devotional that I read called Jesus Calling. So it's on a lot of stuff. I have some ebooks in my stashed away on my phone, things like that. So,
all right. Well, I'm sure people We'll throw book recommendations your way as well. They can follow you on Twitter at OneKingLang. So, Brendan Langley, we really appreciate it. I know you want to get in and get those pads off and get something to eat as you guys just got done practicing. Thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thanks, Brandon. Keep representing, baby.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
It's time to head off to the VIP line. R9 News and Orange and Blue Broncos insider Mike Kliss joins us, presented by Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development. Learn the facts at cred.org. Well, Mike, good news for the Broncos today. What's your read on the help at linebacker?
Getting better. You know, after they had that rash of injuries, it seemed like every day for a while they were getting someone going down, and every week. Billy Winn, the first preseason game, they escaped last week from San Francisco, and they had two physical practices and a preseason game. They got a couple guys dinged up, but nothing serious. And then, you know, some of these guys are going to start coming back. Shaq Barrett coming, for him to be on the field today is huge, considering, you know, when they first, their fears when they first suffered the injury. I guess he was jump, you know, one of those plyometric deals where he was jumping up on a platform and his hip went out. They thought surgery and it would be 5 to 6 months. It turned out he didn't need surgery. It was 3 months and he's coming back. And now, you know, he'll probably avoid, you know, that an injury list to begin the season. And he should be ready to go the first game or two. I don't know about the first game, but shortly thereafter.
So, okay, that's interesting to me that you say that. First off, this is great news that you broke it today. Again, if you missed it, Shaq Barrett is coming back. He will begin practicing this week. And so that's great news, Mike. But that's interesting, your take there, that he might not be ready for the first game. And I know you don't know anything for a fact on the injury, but to me, right, I would think that if you're activating him, that means the guy's ready to roll. Now, you might slowly ramp him into it over the next few weeks of preseason. I'm curious why you think it might not be game one, though.
Because it's been 3 months, and we got 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks, a little less than 3 weeks to get ready. And, you know, it could be that week. It could be that week. Generally, my experience in watching these guys come back from these type of injuries where they've been out a sustained period is they need 2 weeks to get in conditioning. One more week of practice, you know, to get in football type of deal. And by conditioning, I mean football conditioning. I mean, you will be doing some football stuff.
Get back in the routine.
Yeah. And then play.
Well,
now, he could jump that up a week. You know, it could be a 3 week. Something like this, I would think he would need a 4th week because he doesn't have training camp. He didn't have the off season. But we'll see. You know, he might be ready to go game one. And really, because Shane Ray is going to be out week one, you know, they might, and that would, he is going to try to make it game one, no doubt about it. I think the ordinary recovery or return time, it would be week two. But, yeah, the opening day is huge around here. And it could be that he does come back, especially it doesn't look like anybody has really emerged, in my opinion, on that other outside linebacker spot. Edebali looks like he can fill in and do well, but behind Edebali, it looks like they're going to need Shaq Barrett.
Let me ask you this. First off, the timeline that you laid out, that would probably give him an opportunity to get back for week one, because we got 2 weeks of preseason left here, then you got a week of practice before the regular season. So that should give him a chance, and I think that's a pretty realistic timeline that you just laid out there of what really happens. But let me ask you this. With Shaq Barrett,
you think he's playing in the preseason? I'd be surprised.
I agree. I don't think he's playing in the preseason. I think they're going to ramp him up in practice and do exactly what you just said of slowly getting him back into the routine of football and try to get him ready for week one. I know that we really need him for week one.
Yeah.
And what does Shaq Barrett mean to this team? Like, who is Shaq Barrett? I tried to give my breakdown of who he is, and I'm curious your breakdown of who Shaq Barrett is and how important he is to this football team.
Well, first of all, he's a in the locker room, I've noticed he's one of those guys everybody likes. He's a likable guy. Von Miller likes him. Zaire Anderson likes him. Corey Nelson, he's like, everybody likes hanging out with the guy.
Yeah.
So he brings that to the locker room. Two, it's interesting what kind of player he is, on the field. Very encouraging player the first half of 2015. Frankly, Tyler, it was a little disappointing how he finished in 15 and his year last year. He only had 1.5 sacks last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the cause of that was. I think he does have the talent to, if he's now the number three, in other words, he's moving up to the Shane Ray spot of what Shane Ray was last year. And moving up to that spot, he was the second guy off the bench last year. He'll be the first guy off the bench this year. And if he moves up that spot, he should be a 7-sack guy. But for whatever reason, he had 5.5 sacks in 2015. I think most of those were in the first half. He had a big game against Cleveland when Cleveland, wanted him in return for Joe Thomas. But he has not had the production since then. So, he faded that year. And I don't know if it's conditioning. I know he has admitted to having conditioning problems in the past. But last year, he was in great shape. And he just didn't have the oomph. So hopefully, with more reps, he can get that back this year. You wonder how effective he'll be with that hip, though. It sounds like they really got lucky as far as him coming back from that hip injury. But now we got to find out, how it's going to affect his play, especially early in the year.
Well, Mike, we all got the press conference we had hoped for yesterday, the one that you had talked about that said we'd finally got the decision.
Yep.
We weren't sure we were going to get it or not, but they did announce the decision. It was good. I think it's good for the team. But what Tyler and I just got done talking about is Kyle Sloter getting the news that they don't plan on keeping three, which I don't think is a shock necessarily.
Yeah.
But were you surprised by the bluntness of the QB situation from Vance Joseph?
Was I surprised that Kyle Sloter got cut yesterday? Yeah.
Mike, you made me laugh, man.
Yeah. The bad thing about that is what happens if Kyle Sloter may not make it through waivers if he lights it up in game four. He's 12 out of 13 so far in preseason game two. Now, someone's going to have to really fall in love with him. I'm not sure, even with how well he's played, he gets picked up on waivers. Understand, for someone to get him on waivers, they have to put him on the 53. But what can happen to someone like that is someone can offer him the rookie minimum salary for practice squad. In other words, the practice squad salary is somewhere around $120,000 now, give or take. But you can give him a rookie salary of, which is, what, $460,000 now? $465,000?
A team could say,
we'll pay you $465,000 to come on our practice squad. And so that's the danger in putting something like that out there is, Sloter, people now know that he's not going to make the 53. Let's get some film on him. Let's watch him. They watch that first couple games and say, hey, this guy's got something. He would be a nice number three for any team right now. And so there might be some competition there. So that I think if Vance had a chance to take that back, he would. We'll see if he gets asked about it today, we'll see what he does.
Maybe. And first off, appreciate you jumping on here on short notice. And so this is my last question for you, and I'll let you run. But with Vance Joseph saying that, you know, I was reading some tea leaves, and this happened with Alan Barber. Teams will preemptively announce that they're going to release somebody as trade bait. Has Kyle Sloter done enough to potentially earn a draft pick as a trade?
No, I don't think so. I'd be surprised by that.
Okay.
I mean, maybe a conditional seventh. I mean, those draft picks for guys like that, and he was undrafted just 2 months ago. I would be surprised. Frankly, a guy like him, I think is worth more than any type of draft pick. A conditional seventh rounder, I would think, he's worth more to keep than to get that in return.
All right, Mike. Well, I hope you got a good haircut, man. It's flowing and it's beautiful. I saw you with some bedhead out in San Francisco, and yeah, it was not a good look. I'm glad you got it cut. You have a fantastic day. And just between you and I, I like gift cards to Shanahan's and elsewhere. Okay.
I understand. I was gonna get you something, but I wasn't gonna go that far.
All right. Have a great one, man.
All right. See ya.
That's our man, Mike Kliss. Of course, brought to you by Coloradans for Responsible Energy Development. Learn the facts at cred.org.
Head out and talk with a guy that I've known for a long, long time. Excellent play-by-play man, as I detailed a little bit earlier. Spent, I think it was 14 years as play-by-play voice of the Bears. He is currently the play-by-play voice of the Packers, and I think this is his 21st season. I'm talking about Wayne Larrabee. Wayne, it's Dave Logan. How are you?
Good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm good. You must have started your career, my friend, when you were about 11.
Yeah. It's been a while, that's for sure. Yeah, but I remember broadcasting games when you were playing.
Yeah.
Well, that's how far that goes back.
You know what? You and I said that earlier. I think you were doing Kansas City games when I was playing, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, so this is interesting to me, because you had such a nice long run with the Bears. And then to move, it's not all that uncommon, I guess, to move from one team to another, but to move within the same division, is that an atypical move as I sit here and look at this?
Yeah, I would say so. In that, it's not something that occurs very often in our business, as you know, but, I'd grown up as a kid and a Green Bay Packers fan. And so when that opportunity presented itself, I said, you know, why not give it a shot? How often in our business do you get to actually broadcast games for a team you grew up following? And so it was a great opportunity.
Yeah, I know exactly what that feels like here in Denver. Was Max McGee your partner at one point?
No. Max and Jim retired
together
at the end of the 98 season, and then I came over from there.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Packers this year. You look at the success they had last year, and frankly, from an outside perspective, I was a little bit surprised they went as far as they did. They had a great playoff victory in improbable fashion, I might add, at Dallas, and then got all the way down to the championship game against the Falcons. I mean, were you pleasantly surprised with that, or did you anticipate calling every game that they had that in them?
Well, very much surprised by the way that season turned around, Dave. I mean, that four-game losing streak, they were losing, and they weren't just losing. They were losing in pretty convincing fashion each week during that streak that began, I believe, in Tennessee and ended in Washington, and then finally they got a win in Philadelphia that turned it around. But, I guess we really shouldn't be surprised by anything Aaron Rodgers does. He's pretty much capable of whatever,
yeah.
Whether it's probable or improbable. And that's what he did. He kind of took that team on his shoulders and carried them down the stretch, and they followed him.
Wayne Larrabee, the fine play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, our guest. I want to ask you about Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I've called Broncos games against the Packers, and so obviously I've seen him in that capacity. I've watched games in which Aaron has played, but you've called games and I would guess have gotten to know him a bit. If you were to list the three most important qualities that Aaron Rodgers brings to the game of football as a quarterback for the Packers, what would those three be?
Leadership, intelligence, and ability. He's got all three in spades. And really, that's what makes him a special, I think, talent in this league today. But, you know, he's the quarterback everyone wants to be. He sees the field. His intelligence, you know, when he walks into a room, Dave, you know, he walks in rather unassuming, but there's no question that he's the smartest guy in the room. And everyone understands that and knows that. The other thing is the athletic ability. I mean, to be able to do the things he can do outside the pocket. And I think that a trait he's really developed in recent seasons, and we saw it a lot in the Giants playoff game. The Giants, in my opinion, going into this year, have the best defense in the NFC. And at the end of last year, they were one of the best defenses in football. They did a great job of containing Aaron Rodgers in the pocket, and he did a great job of staying alive in the pocket. And that's something not every quarterback can do, but Aaron has a great feel for that type of thing, and that's, again, what was allowed him to elevate this team.
Yeah, I described it a little bit earlier before you got on as his ability to sort of pinball himself away from defenders and stay in the pocket and stay alive.
Yeah, and, you know, again, you're talking about, you've got to have a feel for that. That's not just athletic ability. You get out on the flank and you're running and you're throwing. That's athletic ability. But when you're in the pocket and you're looking downfield, you know the pressure is close. That's what separates the really good quarterbacks from just decent quarterbacks.
Voice of the Packers, Wayne Larrivee, our guest on Orange and Blue 760. I'm Dave Logan. This is Broncos One-on-One. You look at how Aaron Rodgers' career started. Now, this is a guy, as we sit here today, that obviously is going to be in the Hall of Fame. There's no doubt about that. But the first few years of Aaron Rodgers' career, there were, I don't know, you tell me, there were a hefty percentage of Packers fans that, A, didn't like the guy because he was drafted, I think, eventually to replace the legend Brett Favre, and maybe even Packers fans that wondered, I don't know if this guy has enough talent to really do the job.
You know, he came out of Cal, and Mike McCarthy, it was interesting, was kind of talking about this, and San Francisco, you know, the decisions were made by people other than Mike McCarthy, who was the offense coordinator at the time when Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith came out in the draft. And the thing that Mike knew is that Aaron would need some refinement mechanically, that type of thing. But as far as athletic ability, intelligence, and tangibles, he had it all. And so when he came to Green Bay, they had some work to do with him. And Mike Sherman was still the head coach. They fired Mike after that first season that Aaron was in town. And then Mike McCarthy came in, which might have been the best thing to ever happen to Aaron Rodgers. McCarthy and Tom Clemens spent 3 years of building this quarterback. And by the end of the 2007 season, when Brett Favre led the Packers on a magical run to the playoffs and the NFC championship game, the Packers knew, the coaching staff knew, hey, we got a guy here who could play as well as anybody in the league, including Brett. And so, you know, that's how they developed Aaron Rodgers. And I think that a lot of people didn't want to see the end of the Brett Favre era. It was such a magical run here in Green Bay, and that was part of it. And the other part was that people just hadn't seen Aaron Rodgers play a whole lot on the pro level, and so I think that's why there was so much questioning in 2008 when he became the starter.
Hey, Wayne, last couple of questions for you. You being the play-by-play guy, you get an opportunity to know a lot of the players. You certainly get an opportunity to know the starting quarterback. I think from afar we can see, or I can see, some of the similarities in the games of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, certainly in arm strength and their ability to know when to take some chances and to fit the football into tight windows. But what two or three things strike you as being the most dissimilar between Favre and Rodgers?
Brett was great. He would, you know, he could make plays and throws that nobody would even think about making. And yet he would do that. And, you know, the difference in the two quarterbacks, as I see it, Dave, really has more to do with just when they take their chances. And Aaron doesn't gamble the same way Brett Favre gambled. Brett would push all the chips to the center of the table at the end of the game and throw one downfield, and it was 50-50. Aaron doesn't play like that. He hoards his chips. He takes his shots when the percentages favor him. He's a little more careful with the football down the stretch of a football game than Brett Favre was. Both are great in what they did, and nothing, take nothing away from Brett. He was a tremendous talent, great quarterback here. Obviously, will always be beloved, but That's the biggest difference. I think Aaron is a little more calculating. Brett is out there, and the reason he was so popular was the way he played the game, just all out, you know, passion, and he's going to make that throw and beat that defensive back. Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't.
How about their personalities with Rodgers and Favre, whether dealing with football questions or even off the field? I mean, are they alike in your mind, or are they maybe not similar in any regard?
They're not similar, in my opinion, in the way they handle themselves with media or off the field and that type of thing. Aaron is a little cooler, I would say, and I mean that in a descriptive way. I'm not being disparaging in any way, shape, or form, because, you know, it's just the way he handles people and the way he addresses people. Brett is, you know, down home. He'll spin a yarn with you and that kind of thing. Aaron will answer your question to the best of his ability. He'll give you good answers. Same with Brett, but it's just that one, Aaron will answer the same question in maybe 30 seconds. Brett will go on for 3 minutes. And that's just the way they are, just their personalities. Both just great guys to deal with. I've got to tell you, Dave, from our standpoint in our business, they're both just tremendous people to deal with, because you're going to get an answer that you don't know. You're not going to know the answer to your question as you do with some other athletes in predictable situations.
Yeah, those are the fun guys to interview, no question about that. Wayne Larrabee is our guest, 42nd season, calling NFL games, 21st as the voice of the Packers. Final thought, and this is kind of a double question here. Mason Crosby had an excellent season last year. I want to find out sort of how training camp is going for the former University of Colorado standout. And Max McCaffrey, of course, who's battling for one of those wide receiver spots up there, grew up here in Denver and went to Valor High School. I'd like to get an update, if you could, on his status as well.
Yep. Mason is working with a new deep snapper and a new holder. They now brought back Brett Good for the deep snaps on kickoff, on the placements, you know, the field goals. He's got a new holder with a new punter in town. So he's had some ups and downs, but mostly up. Mason's solid. He's one of the best in the business, and you guys have another guy, McManus, who's one of the best at all. But Mason's just solid. He's part of the fabric of this team and one of the best kickers I've ever been around, and I was around Jan Stenerud. Now, as far as Max McCaffrey goes, the one thing I will say to you about him, the guy gets open, and I'll say two things. I lied. The guy gets open and catches everything. And, Dave, the quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, jostle for position in training camp, in the practices, to get him into their reps because he makes them look good. I think the kid's a great talent. He's tremendous, and I don't know how they're going to possibly cut him. I can't imagine they will.
Yeah, that's good news, obviously, if you are right. Hey, Wayne, always a pleasure to catch up with you. I look forward to seeing you here at Sports Authority Field at Mile High. Safe travels.
It was great, Dave. Take care.
Take care. That's Wayne Larrabee. Good guy and excellent announcer.